Well, we are on day four. That means the final day of the Texas Association of Magicians. And this is Scott Wells for The Magic Word. And this morning we just finished listening to Rob Zabrecki's marvelous lecture. And I have the man himself, Rob Zabrecki. Hi there, Rob.
Hey, how you doing, Scott?
Doing very well, thank you. I don't mean to interrupt your kind of breakfast and coffee treat and everything over here, but I wanted to thank you very much for a well-structured lecture. And it was, well, tell us about it, rather than me doing all the talking again this time.
Well, thank you, first of all. You know, you never know how these things are going to go.
Right.
Performances, lectures, any of it. And I was really pleased with the results. First of all, there were so many people that came out for a early, you know, for a Monday morning. It was really nice to see a full house for a lecture, or pretty close to it, at least. And then I was just overwhelmed that people responded so well to what...
You got a standing ovation.
Got a standing ovation,
yes.
Yeah.
I don't know how many lecturers, you know, can say that that was necessarily the case. I like the structure of the lecture itself, in which that first did you introduce yourself and kind of, you know, talk about your history, because this, I assume, is your first TAOM.
It is,
and so you're,
yes,
not as well known among the family here. There are so many people who come year after year to this convention, obviously, and so you're kind of a, quote, outsider. So who is this guy, other than what we read about or heard about? So by giving your background and then going into the lecture, that it fleshed it out and made it so much more meaningful to us, you know.
Thanks. I considered that when I was putting it together. I thought, boy, I'm going to come out of left field. They're going to see the performance, and then they're going to hear my views on all this. So the backstory was really important in order,
yes,
to kind of launch into where, you know, to invest, for people to invest their time in what I'm doing. They had to kind of understand, you know, where I came from. It's important to me.
Well, I think it is also then for the audience. A lot of times that magicians don't introduce their character early on in their stage, mm-hmm, performance, whenever that they come out to begin with, that people make a general first impression and they stick with that. Mm-hmm. And like when you came walking out, of course, in your show and you're carrying a box, you know, and you're coming in from off stage someplace different, you mean that your characters develop quickly as well. And I think that that's something important about other magicians, that they should, you know, take to heart the first things that come out of their mouth, rather than saying, hey, how y'all doing, you know, kind of a thing. I personally don't.
Yeah, I'm not interested in doing that kind of magic. That's not why I do it, is to be that person. For me, it's a exploration on a different level.
Yeah, I thought, to me, the quote of the convention there was when Tom Mulick had come out and said, you look like Edgar Allan Poe looking for Sudafed.
Oh, yeah. That was, yeah, Harry Anderson, actually.
Oh, it was Harry said that.
Yeah. Tom said, that dance will keep him out of the military. That I thought was so much fun. I just thought that was really deeply funny. I think Tom's one of the funniest people, and Harry.
Yeah.
So it was really a pleasure to have both of them kind of like tear into my stuff a little bit.
And the lecture itself was just essentially going the alphabet lecture, A, mm-hmm, through Z,
yep,
and,
yep,
talking about things. And there was one item you said, if I can only speak for 2 minutes on one thing, it would be this
emotional
part.
It would be emotional risk, you know.
Yeah.
And all I can say is I realize how valuable time is, and that when we're performing for people, we want to be able to get them out of their heads and let them forget their troubles for that brief time that we're spending with them, and there's no time to be boring. You know, we've got to kind of heighten ourselves and present the best, put our best foot forward, and hopefully take them out of their troubled minds for that brief period, because that's what we're here for. We're entertainment.
Right. And I think also, at least to me, part of the takeaway was the risk that you take. I had never thought of it before, but you had mentioned how that you leave up one item to chance in each of your shows.
And, yes.
And everything will be scripted and you know what's going to happen, but then you intentionally leave one thing open.
Yep. That's important to me, and that changes per performance. I'll sort of decide where the you know, the chance factor will come in.
Because as you found out the other night, whenever that you borrowed the guy's chair that was sitting next to me, and
yes,
that was something you were going to add to the show.
I think so. So then the next show I'll find another, and I'll find something else that I can infuse that bit of chance to. And that oftentimes it leads to nothing. You know, it can just be, just the idea of chance is an open, refreshing thought. And so you know, once in a while you get lucky with something.
Yeah. Now, this is, again, your first AOM. How have you enjoyed it?
Immensely. I've had a great time. Mm-hmm. I've met some wonderful people. I've got to reconnect with people that I know. And it's been wonderful on every level. I had no idea how I was going to go over, and now I know.
Yeah. So you'd like to come back again?
Oh, in a second. I'd love nothing more. Yeah.
Well, good. Well, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and so my question then to you is, what was your magic word? Wouldn't necessarily have to be like abracadabra or hocus pocus. You know, what is your mantra, your...
Just one?
Yeah, well, no, it could be a phrase. You know, just a slogan, something you live by, something that's important to you.
Please and thank you.
I like that. Too few people use that. They say, hey, can I have that?
Give me that. Now.
Yeah.
I'm entitled.
It's all about reality and me and now and the moment. Good. Thank you, Rob, very much.
All
appreciate
right.
your time.
My
that
pleasure.
That was Rob Zabrecki.
Right.
For The Magic Word, Scotty L.
So much.
Knew about me.
All right. Well, again, Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com. And, you know, since we're at the Texas Association of Magicians, there's no one who is more Texan than our friend right here that many of you have heard of and some of you haven't. But if you haven't, you will in a moment. Presley Guitar. Hello there, Presley. How are you?
How are you doing, Scott?
I'm doing just excellent. Thank you very much. I was just saying, it's been so many years since we've last seen each other, and it's great to see you here then again. So what's been new? What you've been up to here?
Well, I haven't been up to a lot. I've been living out in West Texas now.
Yeah.
And
near Midland or whereabouts? And or Abilene?
Abilene
okay.
now, yeah. I was born in Big Spring.
Yeah.
Then when I was nine, we moved to Midland, Texas.
And, when you were in Big Spring, did you just go to the rattlesnake festivals?
No, not really. You know,
yeah.
I was too young for that sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
Thing. Yeah.
I went once. That was the wildest thing I've ever seen.
Oh,
yeah.
It was. I know that. You know, my parents would always tell me about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you're living out there, and are you still making products still from time to time? Or?
No, I haven't made them in years. Now, I brought a few items up here to sell,
yep.
And this is because of Alan Okawa.
Yeah, it was great seeing Alan here.
Yeah, it was. He kept calling me saying, are you going to make a convention? I said, well, I don't know whether I can or not. And then he'd always end it by, well, my friend, it's been 31 years since we've seen each other.
Yeah.
So I finally figured, well, maybe I better go see him this time, you know. Yeah. So I really enjoyed it. Seeing
yes.
a lot of people that I can remember and knew, you know, years ago, meeting them like 30, 40 years ago.
Sure.
Unbelievable. And like yourself. You
You're
know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to come over to your house and visit from time to time, and I still use the magic wand that you made, you know, that the screws together.
Oh,
I
yeah.
just think that's the classiest thing. And, of course, then that... unborn calfskin wallet.
Right. Well, I'd
and the phrenolic balls.
I had a lot of people ask me about that, and I told them, well, I thought about trying to bring some wands because when I quit the business,
mm-hmm.
that all of the brass bar stock I had and stainless steel I had, rather than just sell it as bar stock and stainless steel, that I decided that I probably should take that and out of each of the metals I had, go ahead and complete them and make the product.
May as well. What do you
have? Right. And then just store them up, and then if I ever got back into it, well, then I'd have something to get started with.
Yep.
And which is what I did. And so a lot of things I hadn't finished and put them together, you know, but they're all made.
Yep.
Like salt gimmicks. I've got a lot of salt gimmicks. But I've got to set them on my machine and sand them down just a little bit around the corners so that paint won't chip, you know, if it's hit.
Yep.
And then paint them and bring them and stuff like that, you know, to offer, and which I did. And I was really surprised because I just brought a few of two and three different items, and they're all gone. I think
right.
I was hit the first
well,
day,
you
know.
That's right. It's so rare that you would bring your stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like Alan. When I saw him, it's like, hey, Alan, it's great to see you. You know, that you two guys are so close with Roger Klaus. It's been a long time, you know, since, you know, everybody was kind of here, you know.
Oh, yeah,
and
right.
What's his name from New Mexico? Help me out here. Just who was owned the camera shop that was our buddy then, too.
Well, I'll think of him just saying.
Yeah, wrote the electric
yeah,
notes,
right.
If, I believe.
Chuck Smith.
Chuck Smith, that's
Chuck
right.
Smith.
I haven't seen him in a long number of years.
Well,
either.
I haven't seen him either, but I asked a few people that knew him, and they said, well, he's doing all right. I mean, you know, because I was concerned that maybe he might have passed away or something.
Yeah, just didn't know
yeah.
him. Yeah,
and so...
You talk about underground, I mean, he's been so, you know...
quiet. Yeah. You don't hear much from them, you know.
Well, because I'm out in that area close, and then whenever I go to the ranch, which is north of Big Spring, I can actually go out the back entrance and come swing around, so I'm like 20 minutes from him.
Yeah.
You know, while he's in Midland.
Right, right.
So,
his son, I think, lives there. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I thought for a while maybe call him, see if I could locate him, because I could run over that way and pick him up.
Sure.
Came back, and then Jerry Geyer to Dallas.
Yeah.
Know. Yeah.
Well,
but if not, I'll try to make it next year, and
yeah.
You know, where I can bring him to where.
That'd be good.
Is. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's going to be Fort Worth next year.
Yeah.
A little closer.
Yeah. That depends on if both of us are healthy enough to make it.
Well, a question I've got then also is just about the. You were the inventor and creator of the cigarette through quarter. Some people out there who are listening to this podcast land in Germany or Sweden or someplace may not know that. They may use that and just not know the genesis of that.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little background, the story about how that you come up? You told me this several times, but I'd like for this to be on record here.
You know, I probably told it several times, but I don't know which version I told you.
Well, they were like at a bar and you were just kind of laying a cigarette on a quarter. I think you were doing something with a waitress or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
whatever.
So, the first coin set that I ever made was the copper, brass, and silver. You know, the two copper and one, Connie Hague was two copper and one silver.
Yeah.
And I just changed it to a brass coin, which made it possibly more disarming. But of course, when you think about it, you're never showing a brass coin with anything behind it anyway. You know, and so I worked it with the brass coin, or Oriental coin, and then I think the second was the cigarette through quarter. Now, it's been so long ago, I could be in reverse. Maybe the cigarette through quarter was the first.
How far back do you think it was? In the 60s?
Late 60s.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, for example, I believe the salt gimmicks were like 72, 73, somewhere in there. And, you know, if I needed to know, I've got it all written out. I've got all the files on each item,
yeah.
You know, and the dates and stuff like that. But unless I look at them, I just can't remember them. But I guess probably the favorite that I used quite a bit was a cigarette through quarter.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's unique. It was an illusion.
And you smoke?
Yeah, and I smoke, yeah. And there were smoking places.
Sure.
You know, and so now it's kind of like, well, I got to look for more magic to do or build me something else, you know, because of all the smoking laws and such as that, which is okay with me, but I just need to come up with something different now.
Well, but the first time that you had done that, or you thought of the idea of putting a cigarette to the quarter, what made you think of that?
Well, I think, and I know I talked to Don Allen about that, and I believe it's because of, like, the routine to make it more logical that when you lay a cigarette on top of a quarter, you know, we kind of, Don worked with me, worked out kind of something to say, like, the cigarette's laying on the quarter, that's causes heat transmission. When the quarter gets warm, that's heat transferring the heat from the cigarette to the quarter to your hand. And so it just seemed more logical that if you were going to pass something through something, like some metal, that you needed to have heat, like you wouldn't do it without heat.
Without heat,
yeah, right.
Because it's made to softer.
Yeah, right. You know, like a pencil or a pen through. Now, it's okay to do it that way.
Yeah.
But it seemed more logical or more real, creating an illusion by heating the coin.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And plus, I got to hold the hands of a lady.
Yes.
You know, while I'm doing it.
It's so, positive.
Yeah, right. That was a positive point. Yeah. But it surprised me that it turned out to be one of the more popular tricks, you know, back in that time period. And I still enjoy it today. But the only problem is where do you do it?
You have to do it outside.
Right.
After a few people. Now, how many of those gimmicks were you think that you made over a lifetime?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know. Cigarette gimmicks?
Yeah.
Well, it was Many thousands of them.
You're not making those anymore, though, are you?
No, I haven't made anything in a good while because I basically had gotten out of the business and, you know, with the idea that I may start it back up. I just wanted to do some other things during that period of time. I remember I think I disappointed my father whenever I was growing up because he was a farmer. I didn't want to be a farmer.
Yeah.
And so, but the good thing is I remember I was with him before he passed away, and he kind of confessed that he was really proud of what I'd done.
That's,
you know,
nice.
Yeah, right. Oh, it made me feel great.
Absolutely.
You know. And but now I farm now.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. But I farm by phone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I call the guy.
Gentleman farmer.
I call the guy that lives out at my place, and I say, Martin, can I afford to go drink coffee today? Is it raining? You know? And he'll say,
I guess you found a coffee shop near your place.
Yeah, right.
Too,
yeah, right. Right. And so he said, well, he might say, well, you better hold off today on the coffee or don't get the fancy one.
Yeah, I remember it seemed like Kevin Oliver always told me if I couldn't find you at your place, so he'd be at the coffee shop right over here every morning.
Yeah, right.
So it must have been doing pretty good if you have that much coffee.
Well, at Starbucks.
Back where we are now, making all this noise.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'd walk into the Starbucks, only a couple blocks from where I live, but sometimes when I walk into it, one of the girls there will say, Presley, you got a call earlier. Hand me the number. Who called me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess they figured out.
They know where you'll be.
Yeah, if they can't catch me or find the number, they just call Starbucks.
Well, let me just kind of wrap up over here, and I appreciate your time, Presley. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and so my question to you is, what is your magic word? It doesn't have to be like abracadabra or whatever. You know, what's important to you? What is, in your life, what is it that makes you tick? What is it that is important to you, motto? It could be a phrase, it could be a word.
I don't know if it'd be a phrase or not for me, but I know one thing. You know, I've been away from conventions for a number of years, but coming back to a magic convention, I've met more guys and a lot of them I remember from 30 years ago and 40 even. I've met more guys than friends, you know. And so it really made me feel at home that I'll probably end up showing up at magic conventions from now on, you know.
Good.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's really been exciting to me. And
it's all been about friends. So your word to
be
friends.
Yeah, it's really about friends. And to me, magic kind of makes friends. And most of the friends that I have that are non-magic friends, they're because of me walking up to them, saying hi, and eventually doing one or two tricks, you know. And then, and these are friends I've had, like in Abilene, when I came back to Abilene, Texas.
Yeah.
These are friends that I've had here. And it seems like that, you know, when I think about it, we probably would have never been friends had I not done a little magic trick, and it just kind of excited them enough that, hey, this is an okay guy, you know.
Yeah. That's great.
Right.
Well, thank you, Presley. Very good. Glad to get a chance to catch up with you over here and also to spread the word, the magic word, so that way the other people across the globe are going to know more about you and hear about what you've been up to then recently.
Well,
thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you very much.
All right.
Enjoyed it. Thank
you. This has been Presley Guitar, and for the magic word, this is Scotty out. Well, it's day 4 of the convention for the Texas Association of Magicians in 2013, and it's now wrapped up, and it is over. You know, we started this podcast to begin with in the car, heading from Houston to Dallas, and now we're making the reverse trip. Same people are aboard. I've got Jamie Salinas right here. Hey, Jamie.
Hungover, but I'm here.
He was up until what time this morning?
5 a.m.
And he was partying, and with all the rest of the magicians downstairs, I was up until about 3:30 or 4 o'clock trying to get the podcast out to everybody. So I hope everyone had enjoyed my troubles for that. And also, we thought that as we're driving back, we'll have an opportunity to kind of see some of the high points, and if maybe list a couple low points or whatever during the convention, and what we how we assessed the whole thing. Overall, I thought it was just a great convention. I heard a lot of positive things about not only the convention, but also the hotel and the staff and the food and everything then as well. Jamie, quick comment.
Well, I missed a lot of the convention because of the, you know, working in the dealer's room, but the hotel was great. staff was great. The accommodations were really good. The convention overall, from what I experienced, was good. It was a very good convention. It wasn't a great one, but it's not a bad thing either. I mean, it was everyone had a great time. The best part is hanging out with friends, seeing some good magic, learning something new, buying something new. It's always a great time.
Yeah, I agree. I think what made this somewhere between good and great were A, the talent that was booked, and B, those people who showed up who were not, you know, booked as being, you know, part of the talent necessarily, but it's kind of neat just to have them there and to hang out. You know, like Barry Richardson, you know, was there. He was over from Louisiana, just kind of hanging out. I got a chance to chat with him, but I didn't have a chance to turn on the microphone to let you listen to our conversation. But other people who were just here, Diamond Jim Tyler, you know, we talked with him earlier, and a lot of other guys who are just over here, you know, hanging out, who are fairly well known in the magic community. But then, as I said, the people who were here, like Tom Mullica, like Fielding West, and Johnny Thompson, and on and on, that we had just, I think, a good lineup. And some people who we had not seen before, Rob Zabrecki being one of them in particular. So what immediately jumps to your mind? I know that in your case, Jamie, as you said, that you really were, as a dealer, kind of behind the table most of the time. But from the things that you saw and or heard, what kind of immediately springs to mind?
Well, Rob was a big standout for me. I've never seen Rob perform.
Zabrecki,
yes. He was very entertaining, very different, bizarre in a whimsical kind of way. I mean, you know, we spoke earlier, it's kind of like a Tim Burton type movie, you know, character.
That was a big highlight, yes.
I thought one of the funny lines, whenever Harry Anderson had come on and said, well, Rob Zabrecki reminded him of Edgar Allan Poe looking for Sudafed. And I mentioned that to Rob, and Rob had said, well, it was someone else. I think Tom Mullica had said the line to him, you know, when he was doing that dancing around, that prancing at the end of his show. He said, that kind of dance will keep you out of the military.
that was really good. Yeah, and also I didn't get a chance to see a lot of the lectures. I only saw one, and it was Harry Anderson. But it was more sentimental for me because my first paid job was in working a show with Harry Anderson. So, you know, it's kind of coming full circle, you know, that the whole magic career and everything. So it was really nice to talk with him and hear his lecture and hear, you know, how really intelligent the guy is and how well he constructs his routines. You know, when you see him perform, you think he's just a naturally funny, entertaining guy. But there's a lot of thought process in his act, and everything is well scripted, well done. So that was very impressive.
You know, you kind of hit on something there, Jamie, too. I was thinking that an underlying theme that I heard in almost every lecture, and that is scripting. And I think for the most part that magicians have not scripted any part of their show. They say, well, I've got it in my head, I'm going to wing it. And so they know the general idea, but when I say scripting, I mean that actually means physically having it written out and then rehearsing it, meaning going it over and over and not just saying, you know, pick up a prop and remember what you're supposed to say, but actually having this stuff written down. So a lot of guys were kind of hitting on those points of making sure that you do script your show, certainly.
Absolutely. You know, one of my biggest pet peeves is the word to do, what I'm going to do.
Yeah, just
and,
do it.
And, you know, those kind of verbiage in a performance, to me, a lot of that stuff can be streamlined, eliminated, you know, and getting more to the point. You know, the us, you know, right. those type of you know, just like what I'm doing right now, because this is not scripted. This is thinking off the cuff.
Yeah, I think it's important that if you take lessons, whether you're taking acting lessons or speech lessons, at the very least, anybody can join Toastmasters and learn how to get rid of those you know, and whatever. But there are a lot of crutches that we as magicians use, myself included, a lot, where you will say, what I'm going to do next, or now what I want you to do, or something kind of like that, that if you're going to say, what I'm going to do, it seems to be a transition, almost like using or like a conjunctive and. And so if you were to say that, it's better not to say anything, I believe. But anyhow, that was one of the things that that Rob Zabrecki was talking about this morning when we were chatting about having something of when you're coming out that if you have scripted, you know what you're going to say. And I think your character is established on stage fairly quickly. And if you come out and say, hey, how are you guys doing tonight? You know, well, that's one way of doing it, and that's a way a lot of young people are doing it. You see that on television or, you know, some of the late-night talk shows and things like that. But I think if you have it scripted and actually think about what you're going to say, that you'll make a even better first impression. Otherwise, you're kind of lumped into everybody else and being just like the next person. On a different subject, however, I wanted to ask you, as a dealer, that you saw some things, and also not as a dealer, but we talked last Friday when we were coming up here about you reviewing tricks and things that you see that are particularly noteworthy. What did you see in the room that stuck out this month, this year?
Well, for me, nothing really was groundbreaking and new. And I think what happens now, because of the internet, because of online marketing, we know about products when they come out immediately. You know, 20 plus years ago, when we were going to conventions, that was the highlight, going to the dealer room, finding out what's new, what's available. Now, in these days, we already know what's new and what's available. So for me, there wasn't a lot of stuff that was, oh, I got to have that. You know, there's a lot of great material out there. One thing I do want to say is Mark Mason with JB Magic, I have yet to find anything he sells that is not good quality commercial magic. And, you know, I don't really, you know Mark personally, but I admire the fact that he's a dealer for magicians and putting out, you know, all great product.
And he's a great demonstrator. Certainly, as a dealer, as you guys know, who have been to any conventions at all and have gone into a dealer's room, Mark always has just a crowd of people surrounding him over there at his booth. He seems to just get people. I'm sure he sells a lot as well, of course, but it's just his demonstration, his personality, his charisma. He really draws them in a lot. You know, Harry Allen's another one. He always gets a lot of people coming over to his booth. Bob Little is another guy who is kind of a talker and gets people attracted to his booth, but there's nobody really I've seen kind of like Mark, but he's got good quality stuff. You had also said something about SEO, having SEO, SEO Magic, had good rope tricks over there too. You want to recommend?
Yeah, they had a trick called the Mexican rope routine. It was basically very visual, very good magic, you know, and that looked like something perfect to add to your show for a silent act. I shared a room with Oscar Munoz, and I know he bought one. So, you know, Gold Cup's winner is buying something. It's got to be a good product.
Yeah, they also had another rope routine that they were selling that was a professor's nightmare type of a routine that was quite clever. That sold, I think it was $60, but they had like a $40 for the convention special on that. The Mexican rope routine, I believe, was $60 or $75. What was that? Yeah, I don't remember that. Anyhow, you guys have to take a look at that online. That's SEO Magic for the Mexican rope routine. But that was one of the highlights, one of the things that had impressed Jamie. And anyhow, they probably had, what, about a dozen dealers, 15 dealers, something like that, I believe, that were there in the room. But I'm not sure there, Jamie. Do you know about how many people exactly that they had dealers this year?
Let's see. We had two book dealers. The Stevens was there. And let's see, Lysander.
Alakawa.
Yes, and let's see who else. Bob Little was next to me. Myself, JB Magic, Richard Kaufman, the guy selling the floating wands. I ended up buying one. I'm now drawing a blank on his name. No, it's the wizard guy.
Rings and things?
No, well, rings and things were there as well. And let's see, the club had their own booth with some magic there.
Yeah, Marshall Brodine was there then, too, by the way.
There's about a dozen dealers.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, Marshall Brodine was there, and he was signing the
TV Magic cards.
That was kind of cool. unfortunately, that his mental health is deteriorating, and so he's slipping worse and worse into Alzheimer's. And so he had his wife and some other friends, Mark and Sue Holstein, that were kind of taking care of him throughout the weekend, which that was it's great to see. The care they had, and also the special honor they had for him one afternoon. That was the president's surprise. I think earlier this week we talked with Mark Jensen, and he said there'll be a surprise, and you guys will enjoy it. And that was what that was, and it was very nice. I almost forgot about that because there are so many things, so many high points. It seems like at the convention here. So. Anyhow, overall, I thought that the lectures were good. You didn't get to see them, but you did get to see the shows. I thought that they were...
They're very good shows.
Fielding West is... Oh, he's a Vegas performer. He is awesome. He's great. He's funny. He is the epitome of what we should all strive to perform. Maybe not necessarily his style, but the timing, originality, the presentation, all that was top-notch. So he was another one that was a big stand-up for me in the performances.
That's true, and that just goes to show whenever that you have the opportunity to perform frequently that... Just through frequency, you are going to get a little bit better because you learn your timing and misdirection. Those are the two things that you can't practice in front of a mirror, timing and misdirection. You can practice your slights all day long. However, that until you get it in front of an audience, you don't know exactly how it's going to play or where they're going to be looking and those kinds of things. And so the more opportunity you have to perform, and that means if you are doing charity shows, you're doing luncheon engagements for the Toastmasters or for Lions Club or JC's or whatever fraternal organization, I would say to go for it. And that's not just for people learning magic that are getting into it, young people, but also for part-time professionals and other professionals, just to kind of keep after it. That's what's one of the advantages of working restaurants, I believe, is that you're doing this over and over, and that repetitiveness, you know, gives you that timing and that edge, so that way that you have a more professional demeanor. So, anyhow, comments? Anything on that?
Another highlight for me was the first day, I believe it was the youth event, and that's where they had an ice cream social. They had Johnny Thompson in there, John Chirac, Chip Romero. A lot of the performers were there to meet with the younger magicians, and somehow I found myself in the room, got pulled in, and hung out with a bunch of, you know, young magicians, and I broke the ice. Hey, what kind of magic do you do? Show me something. And we all went around showing what's your favorite move, just to kind of get these guys to want to perform, and then, you know, giving some encouragement. And then it was nice to see him later performing out in the lobby, out in the you know, the common areas for non-convention attendees, and enjoying that, watching them, you know, do a really good job and entertaining the lay audience.
Yeah, you know, that the other convention that was going on at the hotel, or I should say the other people who were staying there, the other group, was some sort of a soccer group that was here for the weekend, and it was a junior soccer group. And I was thinking that that would be perfect, and you'd have a lot of people to perform for, but they must have had tournaments all day long, and then they were tired at night, I really never saw many of them. I saw them in the elevator once or twice. And of course, then we even had a little bit of had to evacuate part of the building on Saturday night when they had a fire alarm that was pulled. Jamie and I were out sitting outside there with a beer and a cigar, and everybody was coming out, and they said, what's going on? And they said, well, someone pulled the alarm, and it was the police or fire department had to come, but it was a false alarm, and all was sorted, taken care of. Okay, well, anyhow, that's about a pretty good wrap. I think everything in general was just a very good convention. And any last words then, Jamie?
Well, if you've never been to a TAOM, I highly recommend you come out. It rivals the size and talent of the national conventions, but it still has that hometown, that small, intimate feeling. You know, I mean, where else can you sit there at the bar with Harry Anderson and talk with Fielding West, Johnny Thompson, and then, you know, an 8-year-old kid showing his card tricks, you know, all that combined. You know, it's very friendly. Everyone is really nice. I was reading a story here on Facebook about Chris Walden. He's a Austin magician, and how he met this young magician, showed him a couple of moves, and then later on that he sees the young magician performing them for a crowd of people, and his mother sends him a thank you email for taking the time to show him some stuff and that encouragement, and that's really what the whole thing is.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit on it, particularly the TAOM. Lots of conventions are very friendly, but this gets to the point beyond being just friendly, but I think it has to do with family. You know, the theme for the Magic Live convention was friends. I would say this one would be family. It used to be, see, that the TAOM, of course, was founded as a kind of a picnic and just a get-together at someone's backyard, and it developed from there. Well, year after year, over the last 70 years or so, that it has developed to the point where people have come to this convention, if none other, and see each other and have become like family. And we just, it's like nothing, no time has elapsed since the last time that we saw each other. Like when we visited this morning with Presley Guitar, hadn't seen him in a number of years, but just picked right up like where we left off before. And just the great family type of relationships. And you're willing to share things with your family, just like Chris Walden was talking about with that young man that Jamie had referred to there a while ago. Well, that was, I thought, overall just a really good convention, top notch. So, with that...
Hey, wait.
Oh.
Don't I get to tell you my magic word?
Okay. Okay. It is the Magic Word Podcast. So, what is your magic word?
My magic word is action. Action meaning go out and do things, not just talk about them, not just dream about them, but actually make a plan, go out and do them. You want to do a certain type of magic, work on it, you know, set some goals and start doing. So the action is the magic word. It doesn't have to be magic. It can be your career. It can be your family life. Go out and do things to make things better and reach your goals.
Yeah, just don't think about it and say, well, this would be a good idea. Get up and do it. You know, a few years ago that C.J. Johnson had given a lecture, and he was talking about, I'm going to give away this book, and that anybody can have it who wants it. You know, who wants it? And everybody kind of raised their hand, and he put it down. And it wasn't until someone actually physically stood up out of their seat and came to the front of the room and picked it up, and they got it. And he said, that's what I'm talking about. That's action. You actually have to do something. You just can't wish for it. You can't ask for it. You have to, you know, pick up, get up, and go and do it. So that's a very good magic word there, Jamie, of action. So I think that's it from this year, 2013, in Dallas, Texas. Big D had a lot of fun. And that's Jamie Salinas.
Can you pull over? I think I'm getting sick.
I better do that. Yeah, I've had a little bit to drink. Scotty out.